Today's February 12, 2015. This is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 5028, the Land Use Board of Appeals, an exciting area. The room is filled for those of you on camera. First, before we do that, I'll turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today we're going to hear an introduction and information from the Land Use Board of Appeals. We've got Melissa Ryan with us today, who's the board chair, and she'll be giving you an overview of the board's operations and a little bit about their budget. And then following that, we have a representative from the Chief Financial Office here to talk about the governor's budget as well.
All right, and so why don't we go ahead and call both of you up. So you guys want to just state your name for the record when you get up here.
Thank you. For the record, Melissa Ryan, and I'm the chair of the Land Use Board of Appeals.
I'm Kathy Conley, co-chair Rayfield. I'm Kathy Conley from Chief Financial Office. And I'm sitting in for Travis Miller, who is unfortunately caught in traffic.
Somewhere on I-205. Thank you, Chair Rayfield, members of the subcommittee. Thank you for your time this morning. And I'm Melissa Ryan, the current chair of the Land Use Board of Appeals. Our board is commonly referred to as LUBA, and I'll be referring to it as such this morning. This morning, I'm going to start with a brief introduction and background on the agency, our mission, and our goals, and I'll update the committee on our performance measures, talk about major budget drivers and environmental factors, and outline some cost containment strategies, discuss some legislation and administrative rules on the horizon, and that may affect our appeal numbers. And then our CFO analyst will be concluding the presentation discussing our governor's balanced budget for LUBA. I do have a PowerPoint presentation that accompanies the written materials, but there's nothing different in the PowerPoint presentation that's not in the written materials. Quite honestly, this is my first foray into PowerPoint, and so I wanted to make sure that I got it right and take the time to do it. And it's actually pretty easy, I'll tell you. So with that, except for starting, LUBA is a fairly young agency of the Natural Resources Agency. It was created in 1979, about 6 years after the passage of Senate Bill 100. It has exclusive jurisdiction to review land use decisions. The legislation that created LUBA replaced the writ of review in circuit court that had been occurring for appeals of land use decisions. Excuse me, I have the same cold everybody else has. LUBA is comprised of three board members, and by statute, we are required to be attorneys and members of the Oregon State Bar. This is our organizational chart. I think it's probably the most simple organizational chart this subcommittee will see. The board members are appointed by the governor directly and confirmed by the Senate. Three board members. The board chair position, we rotate that on an annual basis, which is very, I think, annoying probably to all of the other agencies that work with us to try to keep track of that, but it's a fair solution. It's really an administrative position and contains no voting significance. We also have two administrative support people, a paralegal and executive support specialist, as well as a staff attorney, which we want to thank the legislature for restoring in the 1315 biennium, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. LUBA hears appeals from 240 cities, 36 counties, special districts, and state agencies. The underlying role of LUBA is that to determine that land use decisions are consistent with the statewide planning goals and the local land use legislation, and that appeals are resolved efficiently and according to sound principles of judicial review. This is a flow chart of how a LUBA appeal is resolved in a timely manner. And I think what I'll do is go to the next slide and then go back to this one. LUBA review takes approximately 98 days from the time that the appeal is filed. The notice of intent to appeal is filed. The local government files a record by day 21. The petition for review, which is the what we call the opening brief, is filed on day 42. Day 63, the respondent's brief is filed. We hold our oral argument around day 77, and we issue our final opinion by day 98, according to the statute. Sometimes we ask, we generally ask for a 7-day extension to that day 98. So let me flip back here to the flow chart, which the one thing I want to point out on the flow chart is if there is a record objection filed, some local decisions involve very lengthy records, anywhere from 5,000 to 20,000 pages, and there it just is inevitably something that's missing from the record or is included and possibly shouldn't be. So record objections take the normal appeal out of the process, but we resolve those within 60 days, and then the appeal continues along the 77-day track. Our first performance measure is to timely resolve appeals. That is within 77 days of the date the record is settled, or no later than 1 week with a stipulated extension, so 84 days. The factors that affect our performance on that measure are, of course, caseload, staffing, and the complexity of some appeals that can involve multiple parties, multiple appeals of the same decision, and are quite complex in the issues that they present. For the first three quarters, our performance is at 85%, which is slightly below our target of resolving 90% of appeals within no longer than 7 days after the 77-day statutory deadline. Our second performance measure is to timely settle the record. When record objections can come in, we want to make sure that we take a look at those, resolve them so that that appeal can keep moving forward. We do that within 60 days of receipt of the record objection. We're at about 93% of a target of 95% for that performance measure. The third performance measure is that we are required where possible to resolve all issues. This means that, for example, if we remand a decision, there's a much greater chance that the decision on remand is going to take care of all of the issues that may come up. It promotes judicial efficiency in getting all the issues out on the table and not revisiting issues piecemeal through 5 or 6 appeals. We met this target of 100% during the measuring period. Performance measure 4 is probably the second most important, or possibly the most important, because this is the way that we measure the correctness of our decisions. That performance measure is that our opinions should be sustained on appeal to the Court of Appeals. Lubis decisions are appealed directly to the Court of Appeals, and then, of course, those go to the Supreme Court. The goal of speedy resolution is furthered when only a few of our decisions are appealed to the appellate courts, and most of those decisions are affirmed. Right now, approximately 20 to 25% of LUBA's decisions are appealed to the Court of Appeals, and our sustained on appeal rate is about 85% during the measuring period. Our sustained on appeal rate varies between 75 and 85%, and it depends a lot on the measuring period and how long the court is and when they are issuing their opinions. But we do see quite a few AWOPs, and we see quite a few opinions affirming, and we do see some that reverse. So,
for those non-attorneys, you might want to say what an AWOP is.
Thank you. Chair Rayfield, I looked right at you when I said AWOP. I apologize. Chair Rayfield, it means affirmed without opinion, and basically it means that the court is affirming Luba's legal reasoning in the decision and doesn't feel like it needs to weigh in. Thank you. Performance measure 5 is also very important to us. One of the more difficult things I learned when I was first appointed to the board was that not everybody's going to win here. And that was a little bit difficult, but we really strive to make sure that any participant in the process is satisfied with the process and that they feel that they have been treated fairly. We excel at that performance measure usually. We measure it through accuracy, availability of information, expertise, helpfulness, timeliness, and overall. Our staff are really the primary people who are responsible for this performance measure because ex parte rules prevent the board from ever communicating directly with the parties unless we communicate with all the parties. And ex parte rules basically just mean that you can't. Just what I said. You can't communicate with only one party. We met all of the target of 90% for everything except availability of information. And we really think that reflects that we did not have our staff attorney position between the end of 2010 and the middle of 2014. The staff attorney is really the primary person who can interface with the public and direct them to the rules that we have for our appeals and generally help members of the public in the way that we've instructed our frontline staff not to give legal advice. It's, you know, critical that they are not acting as lawyers or giving legal advice because that would violate the bar's rules. We also, one of our other goals is to provide quick and easy access to our final opinions, which we post our slip opinions every Monday morning on our website. Speak at continuing legal education seminars. We try to do that at least a few times a year. We conduct oral arguments locally and at the three law schools. We are actually conducting one across the street in March if anyone has a lot of free time and they want to come. We're also conducting one at the University of Oregon Law School later in March. And we also make our Headnote Digest available on our webpage. We have our own internal headnoting system in it, and Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, headnotes are our basic summaries of the holdings of an opinion. People do find them helpful to hone in their legal research on which case might support their position or not support their position. The main budget drivers that affect our caseload are the general state economy and the general state population growth, as well as the influx of new people to urban areas. That creates more development proposals, and more development proposals create more opportunity for dispute over those development proposals. In addition, there is new legislation that can unsettle the existing legal framework, also can create a more complex appeal that can affect our performance and drive appeal numbers up. I just listed a few examples of those. Measures 37 and 49 are the most recent examples. But this is just a chart that shows our historic appeal numbers starting back to 1986. I want to confess to Co-Chair Devlin that I don't think this is zero-based. I thought about trying to make it zero-based, but that would just be basically starting with the year before LUBA was created. So this chart, I was not able to show the numbers for 2012 and 13 because my PowerPoint capability, I exceeded it. And those are basically stable at about 120 for 2012 and 2013. You can see in the chart, I think it's interesting to see that in 1993, this House Bill 3661 that I was referring to made just an incredible number of changes to the EFU statute, and that obviously created over the next few years an uptick in appeals. In addition, the housing boom of the early 2000s was followed by a caseload bust and LUBA's number of appeals, just as the housing bust. So we tend to trail the economy a little bit by a year or two, but basically our caseload is somewhat dependent on the economic climate. We wanted to point out that there has been a shift in the basic structure of Oregon's economy to proposals that are at the urban fringe. And those proposals between urban uses and resource uses do tend to lead to more disputes and conflicts. In addition, local governments have begun processing amendments to their land use ordinances through post-acknowledgement plan amendments, which are heard by LUBA. I can go into detail on this. This is pretty land use, you know, heavy, but there are two ways to review your local code to make sure that it complies with the statewide planning goals. One is periodic review through DLCD. That is a fairly cumbersome and lengthy process. So most local governments have found it's a little bit faster to amend their code piecemeal to comply with the statewide planning goals or make changes. We've instituted some cost containment strategies. As a very small agency, we are somewhat limited in ability to enter into any private partnerships or things that other agencies might be able to do. We do contract with Westlaw. We provide them with our slip opinions shortly after they're issued, and then they provide us with free access to their database for Oregon opinions. So basically they pay us for our opinions and then we pay them the same amount for legal research. We've also digitized our early LUBA opinions to provide better public access. We've started not storing local records for the length of time that we had been storing them, which, as I understand, was 10 or 15 years, and it was way too long and expensive for storage space. We've started accepting electronic records as a fledgling project that's going fairly well. We have instituted some savings in our publications. I'll talk about our publication function a little bit later. And we also have a land use fellowship at Willamette Law School, and that, as well as law student interns from the three state law schools and other law schools, that provides us with some help. It was really critical when we didn't have our staff attorney, but as law students and as third year law students and sometimes second, there's a limit to how much we're able to use their abilities. There is some proposed legislation, not LUBA legislation, but that would affect our operations. DLCD is in the process of adopting rules for streamlined UGB amendments. What DLCD is referring to as prescriptive path UGB amendments, and those are amendments where if a city wants to expand its UGB and not consider, as I understand it, don't quote me on this, but very high value farmland, those amendments are more easily processed, and appeals of those will go to LUBA. Right now, appeals of UGB amendment decisions that add more than 50 acres are heard by LCDC. That's according to the statute. DLCD is also in the early stages of developing rules regarding transfers of Measure 49 development rights, and we believe that may also affect our caseload, but it's a little too early to decide. And that concludes my presentation.
All right, are there any questions? Yes, Senator Hansel.
I was just curious, probably shouldn't know this, but you folks, the three of you, are appointed to the board, and is there a length of term in that appointment, and are you term limited at any time within the framework of the
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, we are appointed by the governor, and the term is a set term of 4 years, and there is no statutory bar on reappointment. I'm actually starting my ninth year, and I'm the junior member of the board still, and my other two board members have been, are serving their third and fourth terms. Part of the benefit to that is continuity and the ability to really learn how to work well and resolve our appeals in a way that's efficient and consistent and respectful.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? I just had a mm-hmm. curiosity. What's your caseload at a given time?
It's difficult to say. There was the housing boom caseload, which was our highest, Chair Rayfield, our highest caseload number was in 2007, and we saw 270 appeals. That was an extreme increase from the number that we feel is sustainable with three board members and a staff attorney is right around 150. When it goes beyond 150 appeals, we tend to struggle to meet our performance measure and issue those opinions on time and also issue them correctly. So in the last 3 to 4 years, it's varied between 110 and 120 appeals, and that's really consistent with the economy. But at 120 appeals, this year, if we saw an extra two appeals a month, we would be right around that 150 threshold. So the high numbers in 2007 actually happened to be my first year on LUBA, and that was a busy year. I remember.
So it's fair to say right now you're operating mm-hmm. around 150 cases per year?
Last year we had 120 appeals filed. We believe that this year, and possibly not this year, but next year with these new UGB amendments that are coming to us, we will see more alone, and it's just difficult to predict the economy as the economy and particularly the housing sector recovers, or even commercial proposals. We're a little bit like a frog in boiling water because we don't know that we've gotten really busy until we're really busy.
And then another lawyerly question about the e-filing system. Is that something mm-hmm. that will affect you guys at all?
The judicial, Chair Rayfield, yeah. We would absolutely love to transition to electronic filing. It's really a very expensive undertaking. And so what we are in the initial stages of talking to the judicial branch and also the entire executive branch about a more coordinated process of purchasing that software and achieving e-filing. Right now we have paper briefs with blue front covers and red front covers, and I think that attorneys who practice before LUBA and who also practice before the circuit courts and the appellate courts have expressed frustration that we don't accept electronic filings, but it's difficult. It really does have to be so secure because of filing deadlines that it's not an undertaking that our agency could undertake alone. But we'd love to be a part of any, you know, coordinated enterprise effort to acquire, to shift to e-filing on the state level. I understand it's going well on the circuit court level.
To be determined, right? It works at the federal level, so I'm sure it'll work just fine at the state level. And then the other thing, in the governor's budget, there was an increase of a 0.5 FTE. So, and I don't know if everybody saw that. So I was curious if you could talk to us a little bit about that.
It's actually an increase of 0.25.
0.25. FTE. Oh, I thought it was 0.5.
And again, I wanted to express our appreciation. Our staff attorney position, due to budget crunch, we had to eliminate the position in 2010 and lay off our staff attorney who had been with LUBA for about 8 years, and we worked from 2010 through the 13 part of the the rest of the biennium, and then into the 13 biennium without our staff attorney. But in our approved 13-15 budget, the legislature restored the staff attorney position to us, beginning at the last 18 months of the biennium. So it was a restoration of a full time position for three quarters of the biennium. So we, because of other budget issues, we had to hold the position open for a little longer than we would have preferred, and we filled it last September as a full-time position. And so our request to the legislature is to actually fund that as a full-time position. It appears as a 0.75 FTE.
Fair enough. Are there any other questions?
Chair Rayfield, I did actually want to mention one other issue. In the last session, the legislature restored our staff attorney position and also passed Senate Bill 77, which created some reporting requirements for us to track outcomes of appeals and parties to appeals. And we now track on a quarterly basis, consistent with the legislation, the number of appeals that were remanded, the number of appeals that were reversed, and the number of appeals that were affirmed, and as well as the parties to the appeals. And those that information is published, you know, quarterly on our website shortly after the end of the quarter.
All right, thank you very much. And let the record reflect that Travis Miller has gotten out of traffic and entered into the room. And so, Ms. Connolly, if you going to switch positions?
Yes, thank you.
All right, chair. Perfect timing, Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
You can take a breath.
There is no rush. Whenever you're ready.
Is it loaded?
Is it loaded?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Do I just keep clicking?
No.
This is really the limit of my PowerPoint skills.
It. It's okay. Already open as the PDF.
All right. I might need a couple clicks.
Yeah, no problem.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Travis Miller. I'm here with the Chief Financial Office, and I'm here to present the 2015-17 Governor's Budget for the Land Use Board of Appeals. In terms of priorities, this kind of fits in with the priority of building statewide prosperity. policy and funding issues. Essentially, we're anticipating increased appeals, more complex appeals as the economy recovers, increased home building, and that's one of the primary reasons that we're adding back that staff attorney. That was anticipated by the previous Ways and Means during 13-15. I'm sure there's a little bit of background on the hiring and sequencing of that. So essentially, trying to maintain the ability to efficiently resolve land use disputes, particularly with increasing complexity, and kind of the urban-rural interface issues. In terms of the 10-year plan, this really ties to healthy communities trying to sustain and manage our natural resources, stewardship, essentially. Go ahead. Next.
You bet.
Thank you. In terms of the budget growth, it's pretty modest. Essentially, it's inflation plus 0.25 FTE, so we're adding a quarter of a position. And transitioning from 5.75 FTE to 6. It's a very lean staff. You're looking at basically 3 board members and 3 professional staff, including 1 staff attorney. So it's pretty lean. Looking at the other funds, those are essentially just funds for the publication of the reports. So that's kind of a self-sustaining enterprise. There's a few subscribers to that. Those publications are made available. So 1.8 million overall. The vast majority of that, probably 98%, is general fund. And in terms of the cost of that staff restoration, we're looking at about $45,000. So that's essentially my presentation. Any questions?
Any questions for?
I do have a question, Travis. So, 45,000 or 44,900 general fund, is that matched by other funds, or that seems low. No.
Representative Rayfield, Senator Dembro, no. There was an attempt to kind of transition personnel costs onto the other funds revenue. However, there was some that was unsustainable. Revenues were overpredicted. We had to do some fund shifts, and there's simply not enough to even sustain a part of a position without other funds revenue, and really all of it should be expended in the publication.
So what is the total expenditure then for this, for the staff attorney, benefits plus salary?
Okay. Chair Rayfield, Senator Dembro, I brought my budget with me so that I could answer that question. It's our compliance specialist, so
549. Is the salary 5,028?
Mm-hmm. It's listed as the compliance specialist 3 in the budget.
So it's the salary is $120,672 without benefits, and I'll have to find the page in this budget that talks about the benefits.
The additional in costs, it looks like the additional, the $30,168 is a salary, about $4,764 is the public employees' retirement, Social Security taxes, another $2,308, and then what is flexible benefits is $7,632. So totaling the $44,900.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. And we're happy to provide the exact cost figures for that position.
Yeah, Chair Rayfield, members, I didn't talk too much about our publication function. It's we publish a Luba Reporter, which is a bound book, and it looks quite similar to the Oregon Court of Appeals and Supreme Court bound books. The cost per volume, volume to publish those is about $3,500, and right now we are selling about 50 volumes, and each at $175. We've seen that number dramatically decrease from, we were selling at one point about 86 volumes, and it just with, you know, technology, it's decreasing. But we do still have a subscriber list that includes, I just looked at it yesterday, it includes St. Louis University Law School and the University of Iowa Law School, for whatever reason, and a lot of the very large firms in the state also purchase a volume, and many of the frequent practitioners before LUBA also purchase a volume. So at this point, we feel like it's a function that's worth maintaining. It does bring in a little bit of money for other funds, and we basically have to have money in that account to pay for publishing the volumes. It is a service that we feel happy to provide to those who want the book.
Do the other funds for the subscriptions pay for the staff time to, you know, I guess, create the database itself?
Chair Rayfield, that actually gets to the what Travis was saying before, that it's the amount of revenue is not enough to sustain any portion of a position. We actually tried to do that with our paralegal position, and we tried to do it at a time when technology really started advancing, and so we were a little bit behind the curve on that, and it's just simply not sustainable. We actually, the board members perform the primary, we write all the head notes, and we peer review them and then get them to our paralegal who puts them into publication format. We have not ever tried to figure out the cost of our time to do that, to perform that function, but the short answer to your question is there's just not enough revenue to include it in a possible salary source.
Yeah. In what are the subscription costs, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, Chair Rayfield, when I say a subscriber list, we have a list of people who subscribes, which means that they ask to be notified when we're getting ready to publish a new volume. Hmm. The list is about 78 subscribers right now, but we've seen between 50 and 55 of those actually purchase volumes over the last four volumes. So it's between 50 and 55 at 175 a volume.
Okay. Any other questions?
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, I'd also add that all of the opinions are available electronically, and really that is largely the reason for the decrease. And correct me if I'm wrong, but mm-hmm. I think you have an arrangement with Westlaw?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's correct. We send our, I had told the committee okay. before, we send our opinions to Westlaw, and they give us free legal research for it, so.
Any other questions? All right, with that, right. Thank you very thank much.
You.
And we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 5028. All right, and we'll call up Peggy Lynch.
Good morning, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee.
Thanks,
I'm Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I apologize again. I have a paper copy instead of on OLIS. It will be on OLIS later, but I did it at 10 o'clock last night. so it takes a little time. The League has a number of positions on citizen access and land use planning. And I will not read the entire letter, but I do want to focus on something that's really important. Our land use planning system provides for broad citizen involvement in development of comprehensive plans and development codes. Those documents are then used to guide the development in our communities. And the League works really hard to try to engage all members of the community to make sure that they participate in those local decision makings. That's really important. Unfortunately, like things that happen at the legislature where you do general policy and sometimes people don't understand the link between the policy you're making and their personal lives, that's the same case with comp plans and development codes. so there are questions sometimes regarding the administration of those plans and codes, and that's where LUBA's role is really critical. Cases are brought to LUBA by both applicants and by others who participated at the local level. And enforcement of land use laws is a complaint-driven system. So that's how these kinds of issues come before a body such as LUBA. And all parties must have access to adjudication of these complaints. We asked for support for the increase for the staff attorney to full-time. In 2013, we actually asked that it be returned to a full-time position. Timing-wise, it did not work out quite that way, but that's why you're seeing the ask for the quarter additional this time. The staff attorney is really important because they are helpful for the general public in answering questions about how LUBA works, because the judges can't talk to potential parties. And so it's really important that there be someone at LUBA to be able to answer the legal questions to know how to work this system. I appreciated the comment, and I looked on the web because I asked Judge Ryan about Senate Bill 77, which was something that we also supported before. We often hear of there are all these appeals, and they take forever. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they are very complicated. But it's really good now that you will all have information about how many appeals exist, how many were dismissed, how many were affirmed, how many were remanded back to local governments to try to resolve the issues. So now you have the data that you need should someone come to you and talk to you about appeals and how many or how few there are. I hope that you support this budget, and I'm here to answer any questions. And I've done land use since 1972, so on a personal basis.
Is there any questions for Ms. Lynch? All right. Thank you very much, Peggy.
And I have gone to LUBA once since 1972, and I lost.
And you're still advocating for their budget.
And I'm still advocating for their budget because they were correct in their decision. I didn't realize that 10 years before, the local government had made a determination about the issue, and it was not clear that that was true. If I had known that, I would not have gone to LUBA.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch.
Thank you.
All right, is there anybody else in this standing room only committee room that would like to testify? All right. Mr. Cleave, are you sure?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. All right, with that, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. And anything else from the members? And we'll adjourn the meeting. That's fine.